Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Parsha Perspectives on Parshas Vayigash. Thank you all for joining us this afternoon. In this past week's Parsha, Parshas Vayigash, at the very end of the Parsha, Yosef purchased all of the land of Mitzrayim from the citizens of Mitzrayim because they had to give their land for the food that Yosef supplied them. Vayikan Yosef is called Mas Mitzrayim. He acquired all of the lands on behalf of Paro, on behalf of the government. And what did he do to the people? The pasuk tells us, "Ves ha'am he'evir oso le'arim," and Yosef moved all the people, mikzegvul Mitzrayim vad kotzehu. He took all the people living in the south, he moved them to the north. All the people living in the east, he moved them to the west. All the people living here, he moved them there. The people there, he moved here. He moved the entire population. I think they call it a resettlement policy. He instituted this massive resettlement policy. To the simple understanding is that the reason why Yosef, resettled everybody was the simple reason is that people should realize that it's not their land anymore, that they sold their land to Paro, and therefore Paro can decide who's going to live where. That's the simple understanding of what Yosef does. But if you look at Rashi, Rashi describes that there was an added dimension, an additional layer of rationale that Yosef thought when he wanted to remove everybody and resettle them, the citizens of Mitzrayim, elsewhere. And Rashi says, this movement was Lahodia Shivchol Shel Yosef, to teach us how wonderful Yosef was. That Yosef had a goal, he had the kavana, Lahasir Cherpa Me'al Echav. He wanted to remove the shame from his brothers. Imagine you have 11 guys walking around the country, and they're strangers in the land. They're not native Egyptians. And everybody said, oh, those are the foreigners, those are the out-of-towners. And his poor brothers, these poor 11 young men, they have to walk around the country being accused of being foreigners. So therefore, Yosef says, I have the greatest solution. Let me merely uproot a few million people from their homes, from their farms, from their families, from their everything that they grew up with and were familiar with. I'll remove them somewhere else, throw somebody else in somebody else's house. I'll put somebody else in this farm. I'll totally uproot and undermine the entire country, so that my dear 11 brothers shouldn't, God forbid, have to suffer that terrible pain of someone looking at them funny and saying, ah, you're an out-of-towner. Which is remarkable. Remarkable in the sense of how far is Yosef going? To what lengths is Yosef going? To take a little bit of shame away from the brothers? You know, there is a concept in his history, called resettlement. Resettlement usually happened historically, when an invading empire would take over a country and wouldn't have enough manpower to govern the country, they would try to weaken the people where they are and try to resettle them in different places so that to prevent any possibility of uprising, any possibility of revolt. And if everybody is sort of re-moved around and reshuffled, they don't have those links and the connections that they used to have. And this way it would secure the country in a situation of, from the possibility of rebelling. But here in Mitzrayim, there was no threat. Mitzrayim's in control of its own people. Paro and Yosef are very much in control of their country in every sense of the word. Just in order to avoid the discomfort for his 11 brothers, so that, I don't even know how uncomfortable it is, so that they shouldn't be looked at funny. Ah, you're a foreigner. It's not the worst thing in the world to be a foreigner. And even more ironically, wasn't it so that Bnei Yisrael and the brothers wanted to remain a little bit different? Didn't Yosef specifically want them to live in Goshen away from everybody else? Don't we say in the Haggadah that Bnei Yisrael were mitzuyanim sham, which means not like they were excellent there, but they were markedly different? They were different in the way they spoke, and they were different in the way they dressed, and they were different in the way they named their children. They tried to be different. They wanted to be different. And now Yosef is so concerned that the native Egyptians are going to say, ah, there's a foreigner, and look at them funny. For that, he's going to uproot the entire country and displace all of the hundreds of thousands or millions of people in his country so that they shouldn't look at these 11 brothers and call them, ah, you're a foreigner, you're not a guy from out of town? The Kli Yakar asks this question. He says, how is it possible that for the small gain, the small tiny gain of his brothers feeling a little bit more comfortable, for that you're going to uproot an entire country? That's the question of the Kli Yakar. I'd like to share with you a thought from the Rav Yaakov Galinsky. Rav Yaakov Galinsky, one of the Magidim from Eretz Yisrael, he quoted a very interesting Rambam, a Rambam who deals with a very fundamental question that I'm sure has crossed our minds in different ways, in different at different ways and different points in our life. The Rambam says the following. The Rambam says that the point of life is to understand Hashem. It's to delve our minds, to take our minds and to steep them in Torah, in the wisdom of the Torah, in the wisdom of divinity, in the wisdom of to ponder the truths of Hashem, to ponder the truths of the world, to arrive at truth. And the Rambam asks a very simple question. You know, I look around the world. The world is 5 billion people. How many of them are dedicating their lives to understanding the ways of God, to understanding Torah, to understanding divine wisdom, Chachma Elokis? You know, I'm sure there are a handful. Whether they're Jews, maybe they're not Jews, whatever it is, but there's a very large majority of humanity that spend their life walking up and down the streets, doing whatever they have to do, without ever thinking about the bigger things in life that the Rambam says the entire purpose of life, the entire purpose of why the universe was created. Says the Rambam, the whole world was created, the universe was created for one purpose, and that's humanity. All of humanity was created to be able to ponder the divine, the concepts of divine wisdom, to understand Hashem, to learn Torah. He asks the Rambam, the majority of humanity aren't involved with that. They run around, try to seek out their earthly pleasures, and to come across a person who genuinely spends their life focused on trying to understand Hashem and on trying to delve into the depths of Torah is a rarity, if anything. So you have the vast multitudes of the world of 5 billion people are not the purpose of the world, and the purpose of the world is for this very small, almost elite population. So if that's the purpose of the world, then why are there all these other people in the world? It's a funny question. What's the purpose of 5 billion people if really the world is existent, says the Rambam, for hasagas hamuskalos, for reaching divine wisdom, the wisdom of Torah, the wisdom of pondering Hashem and His creation? And the Rambam gives a fascinating suggestion. The Rambam says the following. The Rambam says as follows. He says, if you, let's say there's a person who indeed wants to dedicate himself to understand the world, to understand Hashem, to learn Torah, to understand the depths of Hashem's wisdom, he wants to eat lunch. He's going to have to eat lunch, right? You have to eat lunch. So in order to eat lunch, all of a sudden he's going to have to farm. He's going to have to plow. He's going to have to plant. He's going to have to bake. He's going to have to grind the grains and then bake it. He's going to have to learn how to cook. He's going to have to learn how to farm. If he just wants to get himself a little challah roll. If he wants to wear clothes, such a person wants to wear clothes, of course they have to wear clothes. So they're going to have to learn how to design clothing and how to build a loom and how to weave. And such a person is going to have to live somewhere, right? So they're going to have to go into the construction business also. They're going to have to learn how to build. They're going to have to first build tractors and design jackhammers. And then he or she will have to learn how to build buildings. And have to build the tools in order to accomplish all these things that they need. Any individual who had to do everything that they need in order to live, even says the Rambam, if the person will live chayim mistushelach, they live 900 some odd years, they still wouldn't have enough time to fill all the subspecialties that are necessary for a person to be able to live a life with their basic needs taken care of. There's not enough time to be able to learn all those things and accomplish all those things. And therefore, says the Rambam, that's why Hashem created a world where so many people are walking along the face of the earth. Each one has their own specialty, each one has their own little corner, their own little niche of creativity, where each person does his or her little job. And that way, different aspects of the worldly needs are taken care of by so many different people. And that provides a context for the apex of humanity, for the person for whom the world is created, that, call it a philosopher, or call it the person who's striving to understand Hashem, call it the one who learns Torah, will be able to do what they need to do with the rest of the world taking care and providing the backdrop for what they need. And here the Rambam tells a very speaks of a famous image or a famous mashal. Imagine you have some fabulously wealthy king. You have fabulously wealthy king in India, and he says, "I want to build a Taj Mahal for a memory of so and so, memory of my wife." and he hires tens of thousands of workers who work for years and pouring in millions and hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't think they use dollars in India. And they build a beautiful Taj Mahal. 100 years pass, 200 years pass, Taj Mahal crumbles. I know it didn't crumble yet, but at some point the buildings crumble. And 100 or 200 years later, says the Rambam, a tzaddik is walking by on a hot day, and the sun is striking down on him, and he's feeling a little dizzy from the heat and needs somewhere to rest his head, someplace in the shade. And he sits in the shade of the ruins of the castle that was built 100 years before him. Says the Rambam, maybe that's why that castle was built. Frightening idea. 10,000 people working for years and years with hundreds of millions of dollars poured in so that somebody, some unique, special person generations later could derive a benefit because of that investment. And that, suggests Rav Yosef Galinsky, is indeed the answer to our question, as funny as it sounds. How could Yosef, just because he wants to make his little brothers, his 11 brothers, feel a little more comfortable, therefore he's going to displace the whole country? Yosef recognized that despite his success as an economist, despite his success as a financial wizard and the person who saved the finances of Mitzrayim, the most powerful economy of the time, he realized that the purpose of creation was not the wealth. The purpose of creation was for those few individuals, his brothers are those people who dedicate their lives and whose minds and hearts were set, directed towards understanding Hashem, towards understanding the Torah, the wisdom of the Torah, and the wisdom of Hashem. And therefore, to help them that little bit, yes, it was worthwhile to uproot an entire country. I'd like to understand what this idea means. It's a very striking, almost frightening concept that everybody else is just, you know, that the masses are just to serve the small elite population. You know, if you ever go to a play or watch a movie, you have the main characters. And in order to have a main character, one person speak to another person on the front of the screen, you have to have a backdrop. You have to have 50 extras. You have 50 people just walking back and forth on the street just to provide the backdrop, the set, for the main characters to play their role on the stage. Now, this doesn't mean that there are a few select people for whom everything is created and I'm just running around being that backdrop or being that background for them to run, to be the main character on the stage of Hashem's world. What it means is that Hashem provides the backdrop for every person to realize their goal. Hashem provides that set in the play for every person. Every one of us has a goal of reaching our own potential in understanding Hashem, in understanding the concepts of divinity, of Torah, and Hashem has provided all those backdrops. Hashem has provided all the background that we need to achieve our potential. And that's what the Rambam continues to say after he talks about this idea of those few people for whom the world is created and everything else is the backdrop. He continues with a fascinating line from Chazal. Ben Zoma was one of the leaders of the generation, was sitting on top of Har HaBayis. In the time when Klal Yisrael were flocking to Har HaBayis, the time of Aliyah L'Rego, it was a Yontif, it was a Sukkot, it was a Shavuot, it was a Pesach, and there are hundreds of thousands of Jews coming up, streaming from all over, all directions, coming up into Har HaBayis. They're doing mitzvahs, they're coming to serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. And you know what he said as he looked down? He looked down and listened to the words that he said. You can't find more arrogant words. Listen to these words. Baruch, thank you Hashem, Shebara kol elu, you created all of these people, l'sharseni, to serve me. Ben Zoma, the great leader of Klal Yisrael, looks down at his fellow Jews, not just his fellow Jews, but his fellow Jews who are coming to do Aliyah L'Regel, who are leaving their farms at risk of being invaded and looted, and they left their farms for a week so they could come to Yerushalayim to bring korbanos and to fulfill a mitzvah. And here this arrogant Ben Zoma is looking down at them and saying, yeah, this whole all these people streaming up, that all these people that I see here on Har HaBayis are all here to create the Sharseni to serve me. No, he had the perspective that every Jew needs to feel. He had the perspective that every Jew needs to feel. When you look around, you look at everybody, wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you provided everything that I need. You provided a backdrop for me to excel. You provided all the things that I need, all the people I need behind me, all of my support network, whatever my support network is or isn't. But everything that I need to be able to do on my service in Avodas Hashem, you provided that for me. If you could look around and see everybody, not as looking down at them, but as seeing everybody as the ecosystem or the backdrop, which is enabling you to do your Avodas Hashem, that is what Ben Zoma is trying to teach us. In the after the war, in the DP camps, there was a DP camp near Heidelberg, the Heidelberg DP camp. And after the war, the Jews who were displaced by the Nazis in those terrible years, after the war, they were liberated and they wanted to resume, the Frum ones wanted to resume, you know, davening, and they needed Sidurim, they needed Chumash, they needed Haggadahs. So the joint distribution in America, the joint had, you know, printed hundreds of thousands of Sidurim and Chumash and Haggadahs, all the things that they needed. But they also wanted to learn. They wanted to learn Torah. They wanted to get back to the Gemara. There was a certain person by the name of Rabbi Shmuel Yaakov Rose who had actually, in a DP camp, had a Gemara with him. He had a Gemara, one volume. It was the volume of Kiddushin and Nedarim together. And between those two Masechtas, there are about 170 pages, 170 blad, 165 blad, between the two Masechtas. And here he had this precious sefer that everybody wanted to learn after the war, and they were back to trying to rebuild life and get back into, you know, the learning that they once did when they were stripped away from their rebbeim, their chadarim, their whatever, their limud haTorah. So they had no choice. You know what they did? They took this volume, this slim volume, and they ripped it into 170 pieces of paper, and they handed them around. And each person took one blad and shared it with his friend. And, you know, in the camp, there was a circulation of these 170 pieces of paper, and people tried to figure out who has the next one, who has Amad Daf Beis, who has Daf Kim, who has Daf Dad, where are they? And that was the best that they did. At some point, a person visited the DP camp, a neighboring businessman. Somebody had a printing press, I think, a printing factory right near the DP camp, came to the DP camp and said, "You know what? The Heidelberg DP camp, you have a medical center. This monastery over here, you have a medical center. That's where they put the people who were sick. They brought them to this monastery that was right at the edge of this DP camp. I remember years ago being in the basement of that monastery, and in the basement, if I remember correctly, again, this goes back, you know, many years before the war, I remember in the basement there were a number of volumes of Jewish literature, whatever it was, some Jewish stuff. Why don't you go down, now that, you know, the war is over, why don't you go to the basement of that, it's your medical, you know, the medical center of this DP camp, the basement of that monastery, it's an old building, and see what's in the basement, and maybe you'll find." And he joins them, walk. They go down to the basement, number of floors below ground, and lo and behold, there's some kind of the ruins of a library or things that were confiscated from the Jewish, you know, community, maybe, who knows how long ago. It could have been, I don't know if it was before the war or hundreds of years before the war, whatever it was. There was some very old Sfarim there, and they took the Sfarim from there, and they were able to, little by little, distribute the Sfarim that were able to be learned among the people. And from that actually developed something that was called the Survivor's Talmud. The Survivor's Talmud was a project that was taken on by the joint in an effort to bring normalcy back to the Jews in the DP camps. It was sponsored by the U.S. Army. The U.S. Army published a Talmud. I'm not sure what to do about the separation of church and state, but in the DP camps, the Jewish Army sponsored what was called the Survivor's Talmud, which they used the plates from that Gemara. That was the beginnings of the Survivor's Talmud that was published in right next to in that printing place right next to the Heidelberg DP camp. You know, that was Hashem set up the situation hundreds of years before, dozens of years before, whatever it was, that there's going to be a theft of Jewish volumes. They'll be stored in the basement of this monastery. Dozens of years later, 100 or 200 years later, whatever it is, Jews come back to this DP camp and it's waiting for them. That's most of the story. But I told this story on Shabbos morning in Shul, and a gentleman in Shul, Dr. Orner, comes over to me after my speech and said, "Rabbi, you told the story wrong." I said, "What do you mean, Dr. Orner?" He said, "That wasn't a monastery. That was a castle. That's the Heidelberg Castle." I said, "Okay." He said, I know because my parents were in that DP camp, okay? And I know because that Heidelberg Castle was the medical center because that's where I was born. I was born in the Heidelberg Castle, which was the medical center of that DP camp. And all of a sudden I realized, this is the Rambam that we spoke of 10 minutes ago. The Rambam who says that hundreds of years earlier, some wealthy person builds himself a castle, so that hundreds of years later, some Jew or some Talmud Chacham needs some shade to sit underneath. Here you have the Heidelberg Castle, which was built in the 1200s, which was destroyed in the 1400s, was rebuilt in the 1600s, rebuilt again in the 1700s, reconfigured and reconstructed again and again so many times over the course of history. So that 700 years after it was initially built, you could have Jews not only being saved through the medical center of that Heidelberg Castle, but in the basement of it. They're able to take the Svarim, it was able to be the safe haven for Svarim, to teach Torah and to allow the Torah to, once again, for Jews to be able to pursue our pursuit of coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom. And that's the kiyum of that exact mashal that the Rambam offered us in his description of why so many things, so many big projects are taken on in human history. We should be zocha to have the opportunity to see Hashem's hand in our lives, to realize that Hashem is providing everything we need to reach for us to reach our excellence, for us to reach our potential, for us to strive for our ambitions. We should never have the attitude of saying, if only I had such and such, if only I could be like so and so, if only I had the tools like this, if only I had the money of so and then I'd be able to serve Hashem. You know, I think they say from, I don't remember who they said it, you know, if I had the heart, if I had the mind of the Shagas Ari, if I had the, you know, the heart of the Yesod V'Shor Shavod, it was a very heartfelt Jew, if only I had the Midos of Yisrael San, then I'd be able to serve Hashem. And the lesson is no. You're supposed to serve Hashem with your mind, with your heart, with your amidos, with your intelligence, with your wealth, whatever you have. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets the stage for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets the stage for us. We're the actors on that stage, and we have the entire backdrop and setup that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides for us to reach our goal, our excellence, for us to strive and to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu the best we can. We should all have success in reaching those levels that we strive for ourselves. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you. Good to see you all. And I appreciate everybody joining us on Tuesday afternoon. Mrs. Arnold, great to see your blue box. Mrs. Reich, good to see you. Mrs. Weinstein, thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Halpert.